Raise your hand if you never did anything in your early 20s and late teens that you regret. That question was spoken by Monica Lewinsky in a TED Talk that's easily available. It's funny now, but it was actually quite painful to watch her TED Talk, which ends on notes of cautioning against cyberbullying, but for the first third or so, really thoroughly addresses why she started to speak in public again and the shame that she went through in the mid-90s. And almost brought me to tears because it was so painful to think. Bring yourself back to the mid-late 90s, and I think most of us in this room can say that at some point in our heads or out loud, we used a word like tramp about Monica Lewinsky. And what she pointed out in her TED Talks was she was just a 22-year-old girl, and with wisdom of hindsight, 22 is still a young person, who fell in love with her boss. And her boss was the President of the United States. And as you've heard me speak before, there was a time, I think, of the last convention era, how I'm quite fond of Bill Clinton's oratory. And there were many good achievements of his presidential administration, but it would do us well to acknowledge that he had personal failings, limits of self-control, which many, I think, can rightly argue that in the political system, those can be divorced from his successes as an administrator and a legislator and as executor of the laws. Judaism would frown upon that separation. We start this parsha by talking about shoftim, appointing judges and magistrates, and within verses, it also makes the law. It says when you get to your land, you'll appoint judges and magistrates to handle day-to-day affairs. And short verses later, it also tells us you cannot appoint a post. You should never have an asherah, a post, an idolatrous post, a tree that you worship. I guess that was one of the forms of worship in the ancient Near East. And so the Sanhedrin makes a very plausible comparison between the two. He says, Reish Lakish, the famous brigand, later become a wonderful sage, says that one who appoints an incompetent judge over the community is as though he had implanted an asherah in Israel. That's why you have those two verses so close together, that being a competent and secure and honest judge is equally as important as being venerable. So the question of justice is very prominent in this week's parsha. This is the parsha where we get the phrase, tzedek, tzedek, tirdof, which you look about our cemetery, that's on a few of the gravestones. That's a passion for many of us as Jews and as Americans. And so the question of how do we pursue justice, not merely through our judges, but in our own personal lives, what is required to give a just, truthful, and authentic outcome to the day-to-day of life is pertinent and critical in this week's Parsha. We have that phrase that we sing, that Miriam suggested we sing in the Torah service, Al Shlosha Devarim, upon three things, the world is sustained. And among the variations of that phrase is that it's law, truth, and peace. Peace. And we have Torah, Avodah, and Gimilut Chasadim, study, worship, and acts of kindness. But Pirkei Avot also offers law, truth, and peace. And the Jerusalem Talmud suggests that they're all really one and the same. That if the law is upheld, truth and peace are upheld, that they go together. That question of how do we pursue justice, tzedek, tzedek, tirdof, righteousness and justice you have to pursue, is a challenge. It requires a lot of character building within ourselves. There's this really unusual mitzvah that concludes the parsha. In shorthand, we call it the Egla Arufa, the calf with the broken neck. So the story is this. You can read it. It's the very last chapter of the parsha. Is that you find a body, and they never actually say the word body, they keep using the word halal, a disgrace. That there is something that disgraces the local communities, found between the communities, and there's a body found in the valley that lies between two towns. And no one wants to claim it. No one wants to be the arbiter of justice for that dead body, to say this will fall under our jurisdiction, or we have, I think the legal word is standing, to adjudicate this. So the elders of both towns go together and they take an unused calf, someone that's never borne a load, and break its neck. And that's the way they swear and wash their hands of the responsibility for the body. So one of the first things that that teaches us about justice is a measure of responsibility, even for things that might seem like not our concern. That our sages and later reflections upon that mitzvah suggest to us that the issue for the halal, that the issue that causes the disgrace of that dead body, is that no one cared for that sojourner, that there was someone traveling between or near these two towns, and no one watched out for him or her to ensure that he or she had adequate food and protection and shelter. And so even though we might say, I was not the one who killed this person, our town is not sanctioning or quartering the murderer, we had a role in it by negligence. So one of the first things that justice requires, at least if we look at it in light of this parsha, is an expansion of our conception of responsibility. You know, as I pointed out, and Yossi had this great statement yesterday. God, I loved it. If you were at Shabbat at the pool, he said, in American law, you can't make a U-turn on a two-lane road, but in Judaism, you can always make a U-turn. And so in American law, I think we can fairly say that whatever Bill Clinton's personal failings were, that's separate from how you might debate the success or failure of his presidency. And some of us will vote one way on that and one way on another. In Jewish law, they say that's not fair. You have to expand the ambit of your concern to include things that may at first appear irrelevant. So justice requires a Catholic, small c Catholic, a broad version of concern, a broad understanding of our responsibilities. It also requires an immense level of courage. Let's be honest, you know, righting a wrong is not something anyone wants to do. No one ever cheers on a whistleblower. No one ever is excited to step up and point out in a meeting, no, that's not right. It's hard. It's scary. I've seen people do it, but it's terrifying. So this parsha has this interesting statement. You know, they're all going out to war. Among the laws we get is what you do when you go out to war. And you can picture, you know, sort of Ben-Hur and other Hollywood novels and movies about going out to ancient war. And they call everyone together and they say, if you've built a new house but you haven't lived in it yet, don't go to war. If you have a new vineyard but you haven't drank and brought the grapes in, don't go to war. If you have a new wife but you haven't lain with her, if you haven't consummated the marriage, don't go to war. Simply, if you're just afraid, don't go to war. You'll scare the other troops. The truth is, and Socrates has a dialogue about courage too, courage is pretty hard to define. Because courage is, by almost every accounting, not the absence of things to be afraid of. In fact, as I pointed out last week about free will, mitzvot are unimportant if you don't have free will, and likewise, courage is not really relevant if you don't have fear. So Socrates and our Torah might suggest that courage is having some sort of calm and wisdom in the face of fear. It's being alert to what the risks are and alert to what you don't know and still moving forward, still taking those risks. One of my favorite authors of novels is a guy named Gene Wolfe, and he says that he believes there's no difference. In one of his novels, the character says, I believe there's no difference between those who are called courageous and those who are branded craven, than that the second are fearful before the danger and the first after it. Meaning that if you're craven, you'll feel the fear so intensely that you may run away. But if you're courageous, you'll feel the fear, go through the storm, and then let yourself really realize how much risk you were at. Let yourself realize how dangerous that really was and what it needed to step through. It's not easy to pursue justice. It's not easy to do the right thing. It's not easy to make hard and moral decisions. We've all experienced it at some point in our lives. Certainly, sometime by the time we're 22, we get to such cruxes. And what's also required is a sense that we're not doing it alone, that others are supporting us, but our Torah would also say that God is invested in the process. The Talmud says that when you judge with truth, God is a partner in that creation. And in the Torah itself this week, we get this I'm just going to focus on the weird mitzvot we get this week, I guess. That's the motif of this talk, is weird things that we're told to do in the Torah. So another one is that a king should keep a copy of a scroll by his bed, two copies. And they imply that it's a copy of our Torah as we know it. They call it the Mishneh Torah, the duplicate Torah. So he keeps one by his throne, and he has another one, and he's supposed to read in it all his life. And Rashi says there's one for the house and one for on the road. My mentor, my rabbi, said you should keep a rabbi's manual in your car, one in your office, and one on the bima. So like that, but much more important. And I think the intimation for us is it's really easy to lose track of what's important, and really easy to lose track of what we believe, and easy, frankly, to fall into despair. There's a term for that in the Talmud called yeush, of despairing that you will recover. And it's easy, you know, in the seven lean years to forget about the seven good years. That's something I may talk about further in the holidays. But so you keep these reminders, these mementos, these scrapbooks, I've called them before, by your bedside to help remind you. Some people keep a journal. Some people have a photo book, a scrapbook, to help touch base, a touchstone for what's important. Because on the quest of life towards justice and towards growth and towards professional development and whatever you may be seeking, you'll stumble and fall. And the hard part, in addition to having a great responsibility for the world at large and the courage to keep moving forward, is the humble reminders that you are not alone and that what you're doing is just.